Good to be with you again. Look forward to this time to sharing together the idea of how to grow to maturity. And this afternoon, for the most part, we'll be working on the third idea, the third topic, that of the idea of a servant. Notice that there is another topic called service. Servant is what we are. The service is what we do. So we're going to kind of separate those two because I think it has to do with attitudes especially. Yesterday we talked about different kinds of attitudes, and a servant attitude is one of those things that we need to have. And so it kind of flows into each other as we kind of talk. But before we, let's do our meditation for this afternoon. 1 Samuel, the 12th chapter, verses 23 and 24. As for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by failing to pray for you. And I will teach you what is the good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and serve Him faithfully with all your heart. Consider what great things He has done for you. I'd like for you to take a moment and in your own private prayer time for a couple of minutes, consider all the great things God has done for you. So bow your head in some silent prayer and meditation. You should be ready to go now. If you've spent some time, just a minute or two, thinking about the great things God has done for you, you should be pumped. You should be ready to go. What were some of the things that you were thankful for?
Purpose.
What?
Purpose.
Means
to be able to be out here.
The means to be here, to be here.
Family.
The family.
Friends.
What?
Friends.
Friends. The three new lives we've had already this week.
Relationships.
The relationships of people.
Church.
The church. The body,
health.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that just ought to get us excited about what God has done for us. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine, and, you know, I'm trying to stay as calm as I can because sometimes that was one of the things we learned early in our marriage between Gaylene and I. She always was able to tell me when I got a little intimidating because people would sometimes say they would come, I wouldn't find out till later, but they thought Dan was mad. And it turned out that Dan didn't get mad, he just gets excited, and when he gets excited, he leans forward and his voice raises and he gets really intense. And people kind of misinterpreted that at times. And so I try to calm it down as much as I can, but there is so much going on in our life that we should be absolutely excited about. And I hope that you share that and hope you find those things in your life that also make that good for you. Tuesday's homework, if you did it, would you raise your hand? Ah, that's what I thought. It looks just like my class at school. It does. I mean, we got two people. They're the A students. You know, they're the ones that do it all the time anyway. And they had 14,000 things to do, but they did it anyway. And they spent 4 hours making it exactly perfect. Yeah, okay. Well, I want you to go back to this one because I think it's important that we do this. So if you'll go back to Tuesday, and I know we were right at the end, and that gets difficult. You had two lists back there that you had to look at, some negative ideas and some positive ideas. And I wanted you to take some time to look at those and to choose an attitude from each list, one from the negatives, one from the positives. I wanted you to make a commitment to improve them. Now, in the case of the negative, that means that you didn't make it worse. That means you were going to make it better than it was by decreasing it. And the positive one, you were going to make it better by increasing it. So that was the idea. So again, take a couple of moments, look through that list, if you didn't do that, if you need to remind yourself of the things that were there, and choose a couple, and notice that in the little chart I put down there, I'm asking you to be specific. The behavior you're wanting to change, and the action you think that's going to help change that behavior. I'm even being more specific than that, but if I could get you to do those two things, then I'll be happy, you know, without the date and the witness. But that'd be great if you do that as well. So take a moment or two and look at that and work on that, and then we'll talk about that for a minute. Well, you're probably not finished, but you may be at that crossroads, because you've kind of looked at that list a little bit and thought about one or two. And of course, they're not the ones that you need to change, but you recognize that other people in your congregation really need to work on that. And so that's what I want you to focus on for a moment. I want you to, in your small groups, kind of pick out one that you think people need to really work on and see if the people in your group have some suggestions for how to improve that and make it better. Okay? So again, remember your groups are kind of down the dividing line where the seat is right there, and the group in front turns around and talks to the group behind. And I want you to kind of talk to the people about one of those characteristics and kind of get their impressions about, well, what could you do to make this one better, or in order to decrease it and have it increase in your life. Okay, take a couple of minutes to choose a topic and talk to each other about those kinds of attitudes you're going to change. You can get started now. Mm-hmm. Would you turn to your neighbor and go, thank you. From either side of that list, things that your group talked about that you thought were helpful. The attitude, and then things that were good suggestions. Oh, okay. They were talking about gossip. How do you know whether it's gossip or just sharing news? And we are a news society, aren't we? We need to know all this good stuff. Yeah. Okay, the indwelling of Christ and the godliness, the idea of what would you do if Jesus is there? Well, he is. So what would you do now that he is? Okay, figure that one out. Yeah, and the gossip is a difficult thing, and I appreciate that, because that, I think, is something that we work with constantly. And again, I think in some cases it's gossip, in some cases it is the sharing of news, and a concern. And you kind of have to balance that out. Yeah. Am I putting them down, or am I trying to fix it some way? And I use it, would I talk to this person the same way if they happen to be in the room? If I'm not willing to say the same things, if they're right there in the room, then I need to examine my motives. Sorry, I stole your thunder. Teacher shouldn't do that. I should let you do it first. Okay. Anything else? Any other ones that you thought were especially good that you want to share with us?
Can we discuss encouragement?
Okay, encouragement.
Both within the body and without.
Okay, encouraging people within the body and without. I think that's a valuable, as we can see in the scriptures, that was a valuable skill. And it makes a big difference. You know, where would the Apostle Paul be if they hadn't had an encourager? It takes those kind of people who take risks. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm too easily angered. I might be in class and somebody will make some bonehead comment.
I can see your problem right there. Yeah. We can work on that.
And I'll be like Peter, you know, and come to the defense of the Bible, the truth, you know, and get all upset. And, you know, maybe I just didn't hear the person or wasn't listening, whatever. And instead of getting angry, see that, ask, did you repeat that, or what did you mean by that?
Yeah. Seeking more information, the working on the anger. Knowing that sometimes we respond before we actually know what's going on. And this whole subject of servant is going to be good for that, because that helps take care. If you have a servant attitude, I think it helps take care of a lot of anger in your life, if you can get to understanding what that means. Going once, twice? Three times? Oh, yes. This seems to be the appropriate way to do this, so we
thank you. But what concerns me is if we don't be careful, we'll be unconscious enemies of Christ. So you watch Colossians 2, about verse 13 down to 20, and you get the things that you don't touch, taste, or handle. Figure them out, and you won't be an unconscious enemy of Christ, because that covers all the sins of the world. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's so easy to flow into one thing to the next and not know where we are, become that unconscious. That's interesting. I don't think I've heard that. I don't think I've heard the idea of the unconscious enemy of Christ, but I like that.
It also... That's okay. Brings out the fact that we say today, I will hurt it. Oh, I think I won't hurt to do this. I think God will forgive me. And I had one guy tell me on the telephone, he was a minister, he said, asked a question about the Neptune Society and what he stood for. He says, you don't have to worry about that if you're a free-born Christian. You can do anything you want to, because you'll never be condemned. And I know that's once saved, always saved.
Yeah, we have to watch those messages that people come across, because they can be very subtle. Okay. I've always been fascinated by the idea of servanthood, because I think it's really key to the Christian mind. And people from my congregation know that I focus on this a lot in one way or the other. And in our culture, it's difficult for us to grasp that concept. We just don't got it. I mean, we are self-made people. We just don't believe in servants, generally. And so for the beginning activity here, I'd like for you to consider the good old British servant, because that seems to be, if you want to talk about servants, then you talk about a British servant, and you get I don't know if you do, but I know, I get a picture. A couple of movies that cropped to mind real quick was the movie Arthur, and he had, he was not a nice guy, but he had this servant that took care of him so well and did certain things. And we just saw the movie Parent Trap, the remake, the Disney thing, and there was a British servant in that one that was so prim and proper. So to kind of get us going in this idea of what we need to look at, I want you to take a moment and kind of work together in your groups about what makes a good British servant. What would you see this person doing? What would you hear him saying? Okay, the C, it's called T-chart. What do I see? What do I hear in a British servant? We kind of get this idea of what a servant is, first of all. So take just a minute or so to quickly jot down some ideas, and we'll share these ideas up here in just a minute. Would you turn to your neighbor and go, Thank you. And this time, on our reporting app, this side over here, to start with, only tell me things you talked about what you would see. I just want comments from this side to start with. So go to it. Good. Other things? Okay, there's a uniform. Unruffled. Is that two F's? I don't know. Discreet.
Bowing.
Total faithfulness.
Okay, a faithfulness. A crisp, can-do attitude. Punctual, and somebody said something over here, punctual. Attentive. Oop. And anticipates. Okay, let's go to the other side over here, just for the moment. This side over here, tell me what things you might hear from a good British servant. And if you could do the accent, do the accent. Do what?
No gossip.
No gossip. Yes, sir.
When you spoke, it would be extremely good English.
Okay.
Proper grammar.
Oh, good. Thank you. Proper grammar. What? Okay. A sense of propriety. I don't know how to spell that. I don't have the slightest idea. Propriety. Okay. Closer. You can tell spelling was not one of my strong suits in school.
Quiet tone.
A quiet tone.
Yes.
Please and thank you.
Polite.
Yeah. Okay. Speaks when spoken to. In the back? No talking back. Okay. No talking back. Never ask why. Okay, other things. I'm out of room. So, other what?
Word master.
The word master, may I help you? At your service. Okay. Other things on the other side, what you would see, you guys getting a chance to do that. You got anything you want to add to that list?
Elegance and grace.
Elegance and grace. An unobtrusiveness. Yeah, they always seem to be there when you didn't know they were there. Marvelous thing. Okay. What you saw from a good British servant, I think, at least my vision, so you kind of know what it is this person that came into your life that was indispensable, and yet you never knew he was there quite. I mean, it was just always exactly right. And I think, for me, that's an important consideration as we look at this next subject, because I think this is a valuable subject, and we'll be looking in Philippians. One of the other things that my home congregation knows is I spent a lot of time in Philippians. It probably is my favorite book in the New Testament. I think there's so much value there for the way I live, and that's probably a reason you have favorite books, is you have things that really affect you for your life. Well, Philippians is my book. Philippians, the second chapter, verses 5-8. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. And I love that passage. Made himself nothing, and what did he do? Taking the very nature of a servant. Made himself nothing, became a servant. Being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. I think the King James says you should have this same mind, the attitude, the mind, and that's what we're looking at today, the attitude of a servant. First question I'd like for you to consider just on your own for a moment. There are two questions there, but let's do them one at a time. The first one, what is it to have the mind of Christ? Because that's what I ask you to do. Your attitude, your mind should be the same as that of Christ. If you're trying to pull that down into something that's going to make sense to you, how would you change that? What would you write? How would you explain that to your best friend? Take a moment and think about that and jot something down along that idea. And from this section back over in here, one of these two sections here, what about having the mind of Christ? What is it that strikes you about that? Yeah.
You know, the great words that are so popular, what would Jesus do?
Okay, the WWJD, what would Jesus do is what comes to her mind. What would Jesus do? Yeah.
Hebrews 5:8-9. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by what he suffered, and being made perfect, became the author of eternal salvation unto all who obey him. That's the Bible.
Okay, that's it. Hebrews 5:8-9. The idea of learning obedience is the mind of Christ. This section back over here, the last two rows. What is about mind of Christ? Somebody from back here. Or you can pass. I mean, I can accept that, yeah. A positive and forgiving attitude. Okay? Anybody else want to address that? Yeah.
He was humble, even though he was better than anyone else. He didn't think of himself as better. He put everyone else's needs ahead of his own.
Okay, even though he was better than everyone else, he was humble and didn't consider himself better. Okay, his mind was to be about his father's business. Okay, a life living for others. Okay, this whole idea of having the mind of Christ is not something that's easy. The WWJD does a good job of getting us started, but pretty soon we see that this is a much, much bigger subject. Yes?
To be as the God-man.
Okay.
They're one in purpose. So we would be as Christ, the purpose of Christ.
Okay, a one in purpose as the Godhead, to be as Christ. Yeah.
I was going to say Jesus wants to be, I would say, to step at their level, to the person's level.
Okay, they washed their feet. Jesus washed the disciples' feet, and so stepping down to their level and being willing to participate in that. Yeah. Okay, seeing, being able to see the big picture as well. And that really helps us, I think, for things like our anger and frustration. If we're able to step back and see the big picture, it turns out that that's not really that important. I often do that with people in counseling. I'll ask them, how important is this going to be in 5 years? Can you tell me how important is it going to really be? If it's not going to be important in 5 years, then why are you worried about it now? I mean, worry about the stuff that's going to make a difference for a lifetime. The other stuff, let go. Get rid of it. Yeah.
Self-sacrifice and love for others.
A self-sacrifice, okay, and a love.
He truly followed what he said were the first and second commandments. He put God first in everything, everybody else next, and himself last.
Okay, he did the two commandments as he said. Were the greatest commandments. God first and others. Okay, the second one was, what does it mean then to take the nature of a servant? If we know what the mind of Christ is,
then what is it going to be to talk about the nature of a servant? In your group, go ahead and talk about how these two questions are interrelated. And what is it to take the nature of a servant? Because he's asking us to do the same thing, right? The beginning of that passage is your attitude should be the same. And if we now understand the mind of Christ, and he became a servant, he's asking us to do the same. So what is that going to mean for us personally? How is that going to impact us? So take a moment or two to talk in your groups about that idea, those two questions combined. Okay, if I can have your attention again. Conditioned response. Okay, how do these two fit together then? What do you see going on in this idea? This could be a perfect fit, okay? Yeah, could be a perfect fit. What's it going to entail from us? Well, you're into this today, tonight, this afternoon, aren't you?
Romans, the 6th chapter. Remember when it says, shall we sin abound that we can have more grace? And the answer was, no, absolutely. And why? Because you're being tested now. To whom you serve, you are his servant. Obey. Whether it's sin and the death, that's the devil. He brought sin, he brought death. Or obedience unto righteousness, that's Christ, and he brought righteousness. You gotta make it, when you make that decision, you
got to
stick to it.
Right. It is stick-to-itness, isn't it? Yeah.
What we're talking about here a lot is the idea of a servant. There's no such thing as self-fulfillment. It's whoever you're serving, making sure that they're fulfilled. But the servant finds their satisfaction in the fact that their master is just going to be better. Jesus never did anything for himself.
Okay. The idea of self-fulfillment, of fulfilling of the master rather than a fulfilling of the self.
Scriptures are clear that we need to serve one another in honor and preferring one another. However, that is not Christ's attitude. Christ's attitude is that we need to not have to talk to one of the laws. So we say, well, Christ has an advantage of us in the hearts and minds of those who know.
Okay, the responsibility of seeking the one instead of the 99 is a part of that, is what he was trying to draw us into, that we also have that responsibility. Doug?
We talked about that to us, this was Paul's definition. And Paul said, you know, I'm a servant based on his observance of Christ's life. Because here he is talking about Christ, and as he said, he took on the nature of a servant. And how did Paul that he did that, he made no reputation, he humbled himself, and he became a leader. And with those three things, that's how Paul saw that Christ became a servant. Yeah.
Yes.
We considered a little bit about the glory of Christ, and that he didn't achieve that glory until God raised him up. And that's what man did not, he did not earn his own glory, he did not give himself the glory, God did. And we have to look at ourselves following in that pattern would mean we need to do the same thing. Wait for God to give us the glory. Don't seek it here on this earth.
And see, we know a bunch of these things, and for a moment, think about a particular situation, either with yourself or your home congregation, where there was a little row, misunderstanding, feelings were hurt. Try to picture that, kind of replay that in your mind for a moment. And then examine it in light of Philippians 2, 5 through 8.
Take the chip off your shoulder.
Take the chip off your shoulder. Isn't that true? Didn't most of those, now there are some legitimate beefs and arguments that need to take place, but for the most part in our lives, it came down to one, two, or everybody was not doing Philippians 2, 5 through 8. They didn't have the mind of Christ, they had the mind of Dan. And Dan wanted to take care of it, and Dan's the one who got himself in trouble instead of the mind of Christ. This is an... And I know that we know this because we're saying all the right stuff, right? We're all repeating the stuff that we know is there, and yet when we take the time to examine our lives, we find out that we're not living in the attitude that we know we need to be. That's the reason growing to maturity is such a difficult job. We know this stuff, but actually put it into practice sometimes is difficult. What I want to do then is look at the next passage, which tells us how Paul got to that. Now, Paul had some stuff, remember? He spent a time, he said, if you wanted to boast, I could boast. You know, and he gave us a whole list of things, you know, tribe of Benjamin, you know, He says, I could give you a list that knocked your socks off. He said, but that's not doing any good. So how did Paul do this? How did Paul commit himself to the mind of Christ? And that's in this next passage, again in Philippians, the third chapter, verses 7 through 11. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them rubbish, that I may gain Christ and be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God and is by faith. I want to know Christ and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in His sufferings, becoming like Him in His death, and so somehow to attain to the resurrection from the dead. How did Paul commit himself? What was his secret? He didn't live for self, he lived for Christ. Other things.
He gave up his goals to save souls.
If I'm with the Greek, I become a Greek. If I'm with the Romans, I become a Roman. All for what? That I might save some. Yeah. Okay, spiritual things become a priority over non-spiritual things. Okay, didn't take credit for things for Paul. It is, yeah. Yeah, that threefold thing about at the end of that, we'll come back and look at that. Well, let's just go forward and look at it since we're talking right there. The threefold thing right at the end is one of those powerful statements. I want to know Christ and the power of His resurrection, the fellowship of suffering, His sharings, and to become like Him as death so I can attain the resurrection. What a goal to set for your life, you know, to get there. And the idea of whatever was to my profit, consider loss for the sake of Christ. In my experience in working with people, this is the issue that causes more people more trouble. They don't want to give up self. They don't want to give up their rights. They don't want to give up what is due them. They don't want to give up justice. And yet Paul says, I'll give up everything. That is the mind of Christ. That is the mind of a servant. And it's not an easy job, folks. It doesn't come easily or quickly. Because we got a lot of stuff in the way, I think.
Martyrs gave up. I won't say I'm going to give up Christ and save my life. Burn me if you want to, but I'm not going to do that. That's martyrs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christ did that on the cross. They couldn't take it away from him. He gave it to them.
Okay, on the cross, they couldn't take his life, but Christ did give his life. He gave it up. And that's where it comes down to, this service. This is probably, as far as I'm concerned, this is the critical point in all of this message about growing to maturity. If you don't have this idea down, then you're going to have trouble with the rest of it. Because it is difficult stuff to say, I'm just going to turn it all over and let Christ have it. And I'm just going to make sure that whatever happens, whatever comes out of my mouth, is for His good, not for mine personally.
And that's faith.
Okay? Let's go to this then. After we've set that up, let's go to this. What quality, Christian qualities, make a good servant? So in your groups again, kind of jot down some ideas now. Now that you've thought through this and you've thought about the secular side and we've looked at what it is to have the mind, go to this one and see what you might write down now. Let's do that kind of quickly, please. In your group. Would you turn to your neighbor and go, we don't have time to report this out, but hopefully you've had some information from other groups that will help you begin thinking about this whole process. So we want to go to the end. And this is kind of a dichotomy in here, two ends of it, because I think understanding a servant is knowing what you're going to have to give up. What would you have other people do to serve you? If you can't allow other people to serve you, you're going to have a difficult time serving others. And that's one of our troubles. We don't like giving up anything. And we don't like people waiting on us. And we don't like asking for help. But if you had a servant, what would he or she, what would you be willing to let he or she do for you? Or would you have to make the beds, as John suggested, before you left the motel room? Because that was their job. And secondly, what are you willing to do for Jesus then? What are you willing to do for him? We talked a little bit about that Tuesday night. About what are you willing to do? Where's your niche? And, yes?
So, I just had a comment on that. If you had a servant, what would he or she do for you? And Peter probably learned that one real quick when Jesus said, what you're going to have to be able to do for me, you know, let me wash your feet, or you'll have no part of me.
Yeah. And Peter says, no way, not a zip. Not going to be there. Yeah, and that is true. Thank you so much for your attention. We'll see you in 10 minutes.